This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 222 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Doing well, David. We've got a great show ahead of us, I think. Lots of interesting news items. Maybe we have a little too much to fit into our usual 30 minutes here, but I guess we'll see what we can cover.
There's never too much. It's just, we just don't have enough time. I guess it's whether your bottle's empty or full. So I guess we should get started. Let's roll that music. Well, our first story comes from expouav.com. New UTM system uses cellular network to extend flights BVLOS. And this was from actually commercial UAV news. Japanese UAV service provider Terra Drone Incorporated and a telecommunications operator LG U Plus have developed a 4G LTE flight control system.
This gives operators the ability to remotely monitor their drones through the LTE network. And of course, when we're talking about remotely through the network, well, that means you've got beyond visual line of sight capability. And, I like these ideas that piggyback on a technology that already exists rather than having to create something new, right? We've got this LTE network. Why not use it? It covers significant portions of, well, the United States anyway. Drones can connect to it, so we can connect the drones.
And that makes perfect sense. LTE is everywhere. I mean, all you have to do is pick up your cell phone and see what's there. So it's interesting that they're trying to bridge the gap and making beyond visual line of sight easier using a technology instead of a whole new technology. You're sort of sliding into it or backing into it. What do you think?
Right. And obviously, there's a couple of parts that have to be in place for beyond visual line of sight. There's the regulations and the technology. Both have to come together in the end to make this possible. But you do have to have both pieces of that little puzzle. And it's good to see them working on this one. They've conducted some demonstration flights. This is part of their smart drone platform project. And I guess, David, they're also working with Unifly.
Yeah, on the Terra UTM unmanned traffic management system. And this dovetails perfectly into our next story. They want to promote international standardization of the system. We've talked about standardization, and I think that will be one of the topics probably in the year 2018. But we've got all of these systems sort of now being built, and now it's time to start setting baselines for all of them, I guess.
Yes, we like standardization in aviation.
So that dovetails into perfectly into our next story from atwonline.com. IATA stresses need for UAV operation standards. IATA, of course, is the International Air Transport Association, which is the international regulatory body for all of aviation, and they want commercial drone standards, which, because right now we've talked about each country is coming up with their own, but there doesn't seem to be a reach out yet to standardize across the globe.
And IATA is working with ICAO. Here we go, alphabet soup. ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization. Those two groups are working together on developing standards. Example of some of the efforts of these organizations is a letter ICAO sent to all of its member countries. In this letter, they asked them to protect manned aircraft operations from drones, which I guess that's a starting point, but we really want to go a lot farther than that.
Part of this is the European Union reached an initial agreement on UAV rules so that the countries in the European Union have come together to form an agreement. The European Parliament and European Council regulators have agreed to new regulations for civil use for UAVs by the EU member companies. The design and manufacture of drones will have to comply with EU basic requirements of safety, security, personal data protection. Drones to be covered by the EU safety rules will be those that have an impact force of more than 80 joules if they hit a person. Okay, you're the engineer. What's 80 joules?
Joules. It's a measure of energy. It's kind of a force times distance sort of measure. And this applies to...
Force times distance? Is that the speed it takes me to see the Star Wars opening premiere this weekend? Is that what you're saying?
That's right, that force. Or any kind of a force. Yeah, it's a unit. It's like Newton's directed towards an object over a distance of 1 meter, something like that, is a joule. But in any event, what we see here applies to non-commercial. And the EU has already agreed on some commercial UAV guidelines. So this is the non-commercial end of it. So we are seeing progress. We are seeing standardization. And here's an example of that occurring in Europe.
I know that we're probably going to get there in the United States also. And aviation is probably one of the most standardized fields in the world. You would agree, Max?
Yes, probably, yeah, one of the most developed systems of regulations and, you know, all that goes along with creating a safe airspace.
So let's move on. I'm sure we'll be talking more about regulations shortly. Let's start off with, this was from jwnenergy.com, and SkyX Systems Corporation, a Canadian drone company, monitored gas pipeline leaks in Mexico. We've talked about this, and when I was up in Toronto for the Drone Expo, we talked about gas pipelines and the amount of time it takes to monitor a gas pipeline, where you can fly a fixed-wing drone up and down the pipeline for inspection a lot quicker than you would, say, drive it or, even worse, walk it.
Yes, this is one of those kinds of applications where the potential cost savings is absolutely enormous and pretty quantifiable as well. Now, the CEO of SkyX says that, quote, more than $38 billion is spent annually monitoring oil and gas pipelines using less efficient means, which often identify problems only long after they've occurred. So here we see them in Mexico, as you say, David. They completed a 100-kilometer robotic data collection flight, and it was programmed and monitored by SkyX at their Toronto area Sky Center Mission Control Center. They did have some support crew of engineers on the ground in Mexico, but flying along the pipeline, they identified in one flight anyway, more than 200 potentially significant anomalies. And the examples of the anomalies that they give in this article is kind of instructive for those of us that really don't understand pipelines and, you know, what they may be. They're kind of interesting things that they found in this drone flight.
My grandfather would be very envious. my grandfather worked for Jersey City, the water department, and would drive up to Booton at the Jersey City Reservoir. And every day he would drive that pipeline from Booton, New Jersey, down to Jersey City to make sure that the water department and the water was flowing correctly and there weren't any cracks in the pipeline or whatever. So I sort of have an affection for what they're doing and the speed in which they're doing and the effectiveness of what they're doing, because my grandfather did the same thing, only it took him 2 days to go from Bootin to Jersey City, whereas they covered the same twice amount of length in half amount of time. So really cool. And Sky One does have a video. It's kind of cool. Pipeline management, I'm sort of genetically linked to. And it's a neat use for drones where you got large amounts of pipe out there, you know, especially gas pipelines. Think about how long it took to build the Alaska pipeline.
Sure.
And imagine how quickly it was that they could cover that now and do those inspections for various reasons. Like in Alaska, wildlife is a major thing. If there's a leak, you want to find it quickly so you can prevent the damage of the wildlife that are up in the Alaskan wilderness. So I'm very cool with this. This was pretty neat. And 25% of its targeted funding is financed already for another round of inspection. So good for SkyX. And maybe I should reach back to Toronto and see if we can get those guys on our show again.
The video that we'll have in the show notes, it's worth mentioning that it's kind of a time-lapse video of the construction of one of these drones. And these are, they're fixed wing, they're vertical takeoff and land, horizontal flight drones. But the time lapse shows you just the amount of work and the complexity involved in constructing a drone that's, I'll say, industrial grade. You know, sometimes you see the price quotes for these things and you think, geez, these things are tens of thousands of dollars. How can a drone cost that much money when a Phantom costs, you know, a fraction of that? But I tell you, watch this video and watch the handwork that goes into it, the components, just the whole thing, the layup of the composites, the curing, just everything about it. When you watch this video, and especially if you have any kind of a manufacturing background, I guess, you'll really understand why these things are not inexpensive when you're talking about a commercial grade or an industrial grade drone like this one. So the video will be in the show notes. You'll be able to watch it right from our website.
Are you saying you're a manufacturing nerd or geek?
I'm a nerd in about a couple of dozen different areas, I guess. And yeah, that's one of them.
So let's move on to another good news, good use, which is Brunswick police could be the first in the U.S. to use drones to spot railroad trespassers. This is from the Press Herald. Brunswick, Maine Police Department is concerned about trespassers along railroad tracks. Ironically, I have family that are police officers for Norfolk Southern. Hmm. And one of the things that they do is my cousin is responsible for trespassing and theft on the railroad. You'd be surprised how many people break into boxcars and steal things. And so this was a really kind of, again, I'm genetically linked to this story for some reason. But they're concerning about trespassers along railroad tracks, and they want to use drones to patrol those railroad tracks. Another good use. I mean, helicopters would be great, but really expensive. So Desiree French, a spokeswoman for the Federal Railroad Administration, says this device will be used for only detection, not enforcement.
The tenor that I get from the article, too, is that the folks involved in this are not out to necessarily arrest a lot of people, but they really want to raise the awareness that walking along railroad tracks is really an unsafe activity. And so that's how they want to use these drones. Now, they do have some cameras set up that are remotely monitored, but the cameras are not very effective. They don't cover much area. They are not always operational, I guess. And they see using drones as a much better way to provide better surveillance of the railroad tracks. Now, there are some issues that they face when it comes to implementing this. Mentioned are federal funding to buy the equipment. That's not set up yet. Also, creating a local drone usage policy for the department, for law enforcement there. And also some federal agreement on how the technology will be used. But despite those challenges that they have right now, They hope to have the program operating next year, early summer 2018.
And just because we like talking about Maine, the Maine police also have had about 50 flights, roughly 30 for training and about 20 missions in response to incidents, car crashes and reconstruction. So Maine is becoming a good place to use drones, but it's also because there's a lot of wide open space in Maine. And you're covering a lot of territory. So drones would be a lot better than the drive the tracks as my cousin would do in the New York metropolitan area. To cover a lot of space in a short amount of time, drones are a really useful thing.
Now, some other law enforcement agencies in Maine are not having quite the success that the Maine State Police have had. And one example of that is the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office. They have at least one drone. I'm not sure if they have more or not, but it's basically parked because they say they've waited over a year for the FAA to approve their license application. So I'm not sure exactly what the problem is there, but it shows that not all law enforcement in Maine is having such great success with this. And these kinds of challenges still exist. But moving on to a different topic, David, you know, around this time of year, we get questions from people asking what kind of drone should they buy? And you found something that, well, gives some options.
All I want for Christmas is my DJI Phantom, my DJI Phantom. Yes, my DJI Phantom. Gee, if I could only have my DJI Phantom, then I would wish you Merry Christmas. Okay.
Okay. Enough of that. But there's some other things out there besides Phantoms.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And actually, one of them is I'm working on trying to get as a guest. This type of year is lists. I mean, I think just about everybody comes out with lists of what they want for Christmas or what were the most important things about 2017. So, New Atlas gave a list of the best unmanned aircraft to get a loved one buzzing come Christmas morning. So, one of them is a Spark by DJI. A Unic Breeze, and that, of course, you can do selfies controlled by yourself, selfies. In the show notes, it really should be dronies controlled by your smartphone. Flybricks, which is my kind of favorite because you can build a drone out of Legos.
Yay, and Lego.
And if you bust it on the wall, you just rebuild it again. The Parrot Mambo, the Splash Drone 3, the DJI Maverick Pro Platinum, the Wakera Vitris 320, similar to a Maverick, but lower price, a Parrot Bebop 2 Power, and of course, everyone's favorite, the DJI Phantom 4 Advance. What can we say? It's a Phantom. So those are those hits. People ask us what they want for Christmas. I'm bucking for a Flybricks. I decided, you know, I have a Lego advent calendar this year. I think I'm going to invest in a Flybricks because it seems like Legos and drones in my universe would be perfect together.
Yeah, how could you not like Legos? Well, going from the small to the very large, we have some news about a Chinese drone.
The CH-4. Otherwise known as an MQ-9
knockoff.
Duplicate knockoff. Yeah, I was trying to figure out a proper way, but not quite. But, you know.
In appearance, anyway.
The old argument was that aeronautics in the Soviet Union was the same as aeronautics in the United States. That's why airplanes looked alike. No one ever really believed that, but that was always a saying. The CH-4 is commonly known as the rainbow drone, and we've talked about it a little bit in the past. But instead of being a hostile technology for us here in the United States, it's going to do some really good things, like prevent forest fires in China.
To this point, monitoring for forest fires was done by visual observation, lookout posts, the kinds of towers, I think, that you see in many places. And occasionally from manned aircraft, somebody looking out the window with some binoculars trying to spot fires. So that's not very effective, but the CH-4 is going to be used to perform that kind of a mission. And it has some interesting advantages over the manual observation. For one thing, it's got not only visual sensors, but infrared sensors. So it can be used day and night, but also significantly for that region of China, where they're going to deploy this, it can see through fog. And that makes it much more effective than manned observers. The CH-4, it's a male, right, David? Medium altitude, long endurance drone.
Yeah, we haven't used that term in a while, but yeah, it can fly at an altitude between 4,000 and 5,000 meters for more than 30 hours. So it's a persistent technology that can focus into an area. I know that we've been using now drones in California, and one of the things, if we go back to, what episode was it where we were talking about firefighting? Max, insert this episode here.
yeah, we'll have to look it up.
But one of the things was that a lot of manned aircraft do not fly at night. And persistent technology like a male drone can fly at night to keep track of hot spots overnight so that when the morning comes and the fire attackers need to go after that point, they have real-time data instead of having to wait for an aircraft to come up and find the hot spots. The CASIC Rainbow, or the Chai Kong, which is CH, is a series of unmanned vehicles developed by the Chinese Academy of Aerospace and Aerodynamics and China Aerospace Science and Technology, other than CASIC, though it looks a lot like an MQ-9 Reaper.
It does. It does. A CASC, one of the many pseudo-private, pseudo-government organizations, aviation organizations in China. But there are different models of the CH family of drones. They kind of cover a pretty big spectrum, I think.
Well, right. The CH-4A is a reconnaissance drone, and I'm sure that that's what they're going to be using to help the forest fires. The CH-4B is a mixed attack and reconnaissance system with provisions for 6 weapons and a payload of 250 to 345 kilograms, i.e. a Reaper. The MQ-9 is an attack aircraft. Predators originally were RQ-1s, which were reconnaissance, and then they became MQ-1s when they were able to be equipped with Hellfires. And it's got an export capacity. The CH-4B has been exported to Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq. Saudi Arabia actually has been using them in Yemen as a weapon. So
that wouldn't happen to be, there was a Saudi, wasn't there a Saudi drone that crashed in Yemen? Did I see that in the news?
It was, and it was a CH-4B, yes.
Oh, okay. Wow. I didn't make that connection until just now.
Technology is important. And in this case, like us using predators for defense or Reapers as predator twos for civil defense and firefighting, China is doing the same thing. So we like peaceful roles for military hardware. And there's nothing better than a C-130 fighting fires. Good for China. Hopefully, they'll spread more peace with drones and hard-ass firepower. But let's talk about a quick shot. This from my local area, WPVI-TV in Philly. New Jersey lawmakers are moving ahead with legislation that would make it illegal to operate a drone while drunk. I saw this tonight and went, really? Okay. No drunk drone flying. What do you think, Max?
Well, you know, it's an interesting bill. I guess it falls in line with local governments trying to, you know, regulate locally based on the needs that they perceive that can be met by local legislation. You know, we you get back into that issue of, you know, who has jurisdiction over this kind of thing. But the bill does include some other things that are worth noting besides influence under the alcohol for flying a drone. That they would make that a disorderly person's offense, which could have a sentence of up to 6 months in prison or a $1,000 fine or both. But it does some other things, like making it illegal to use a drone to hunt wildlife or to endanger people or property. It would bar using drones that endanger safety at correctional facilities, make that a crime. Also, it would criminalize interfering with first responders who are engaged in transport. All of those things make sense, but again, if local governments enact these kinds of things, then we'll have this patchwork of inconsistent laws around the country, and that's a problem.
Well, good for my home state. They're at least trying. I don't know what they're trying, but they're trying.
Yeah.
But, you know, in all fairness, it's my home state, and they're trying to improve things, unlike your state of Connecticut, where they're trying to gun down people with drones.
Here we go. Yeah. Well, you know, someone else who is trying really hard is Airbus. The level of their activity in the unmanned arena is kind of staggering. We just keep hearing more and more examples. And there's an article in Aviation Week. We'll put a link in the show notes, but note that it is behind the paywall. So if you're an Aviation Week subscriber, you can see it. And if you're not, you can't. But we'll tell you what it says. It says that Airbus is taking a financial stake in UAvionics. And that's the Montana-based startup that's developing miniaturized ADS-B transceivers for detect and avoid in drones. Interesting that Airbus is, they didn't purchase them. I think they just took a, an equity position in that company, but, you know, a funding shot in the arm for UAvionics, I'm sure will be helpful.
Yeah. Well, Boeing keeps buying companies and Airbus keeps investing in them, which is kind of an interesting differentiation, don't you think, between the two major companies?
Yeah. That sounds like a different strategy, of course. Yeah.
Let's talk about what Airbus is in AirMap, which is airspace management for drones, AI, which is spelled A-E-Y-E, a startup specializing in vision systems for autonomous vehicles, i.e. goggles, Best Mile, a Swiss company developing a fleet management platform for urban mobility, Cognata, an Israeli developer of deep learning simulations to accelerate the validation of safety of autonomous vehicles. But wait, there's more, and I'm throwing it to my co-host.
There are some other interesting companies that maybe are a little less directly drone-related, but they do have a connection. So, for example, Humatics, they are developing micro-location products that allows humans and machines to navigate and collaborate. Okay, that sounds like it has, you know, unmanned aircraft applications. Another company, a Belgian startup called EPs, and that's E and P-E-A-S. They specialize in energy harvesting for ultra-low power Internet of Things devices. Airbus is also invested in Infostellar in Japan. They have a satellite antenna sharing software platform, and also Astrocast in Switzerland. They plan a nanosat constellation for machine-to-machine communication. So, yeah, Airbus is into these kinds of technologies pretty deeply. And they've also formed their own startup subsidiary, Airbus Aerial,
which offers Earth imaging services and using data collected from satellites, high-flying manned and unmanned aircraft, and low-altitude drones. So they're working on the data management portion while these other people are working on the data collection portion. So Airbus has got a strategy here, clearly. It's kind of fun to watch because basically Boeing keeps purchasing companies with the technology, and Airbus is sort of putting its tentacles into everything. So it's very interesting watching our two favorite companies fight it out in another spectrum, in this case, UAVs and UAS.
Yeah, we thought things were going to be exciting over the next year or so just due to formation of regulations and standards for unmanned aircraft. But at the same time, we have all this excitement with these players, these companies getting involved. So we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about, I think, in the coming year, David.
I love this industry. I just, it's so much fun. And we talk about, we can talk about everything from whales to drones to fires to, I mean, it's amazing how this industry is touching everyone. They may not realize it yet, but they are, you know. And it's funny because I get excited listening to our co-host on Airplane Geeks, Brian, talk about his 3D printer. And how often have we talked about 3D printing here on our show? I'm really proud of the fact that we stumbled on something that is touching just about everybody. They may not realize it, but it's touching them.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with that, we want to thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 222. As always, you can find show notes at the UAVDigest.com/222. We'll have links to all the stories that we talked about, that video that we mentioned, some other great stuff. And, of course, you can follow us on social media. David, where do folks find us on social media?
Where we really want you is on our Slack listener team with all of our other high-powered listeners and developing the conversations and talking about technology. And you can do that by sending us a request through our feedback@theUAVDigest email address. Or you can follow us on Twitter @UAVDigest or Facebook/TheUAVDigest. And of course, you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com. It's Christmas time and you want to get maybe something special for that dronophobe in your life. And that would be through our Cafe Press Store /TheUAVDigest. So this is David, who's really tired and is going to drive 10 hours to Detroit tomorrow, signing off from Fort Washington.
And this is Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.